Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias.
Hello.
Dunker Nation, let's ride.
You have brought it back.
I had to. Did you see how mad that defensive player got at Russell Wilson yesterday?
That's cool. That's cool. That is cool. That has immediately turned into one of the worst NFL trades in recent memory. That's a whole lot of players and a whole lot of picks for Russell Wilson
Do you think he said let's ride? Do you think he was trying to give encouragement?
Honestly, I think either one would have warranted that exact reaction that he got on the sideline. That's just kind of tough.
Do you know how upset you have to be walking in a straight direction? Decide, no, absolutely not. I'm coming to speak to you in particular.
Like, one, yes. Two, it's even funnier considering they both play on different sides of the ball. Like, this ain't even your position group. You really had to be upset. Be like, hey, bro, get it together. Get it together. Oh, poor Russell.
We're going to have some fun today. I did not have any fun. Thank you, Oregon State, for that. But salute to you, Nikias, for getting some dubs this weekend.
They didn't feel like dubs at times, but dubs were had.
They never do with you, man.
What? Look, I just want my teams to perform well. But no, shout out to USC and shout out to Philly. 10-1 on the year, having some fun. Aside from sports hijinks, how was the weekend for you? How was the holiday?
It was good. It was good. Lots of turkey. Did some chilling, did some relaxing. Watched some of the football and the football.
I see.
Watched Survivor Series, Games of War.
Just reading your timeline, it seemed like that was a fun event.
Oh, man, dog. They hugged. I was in shambles. What a moment that was. But anyways, we'll talk Bloodline Patreon content.
Okay, we'll save that for later. A little bit of housekeeping as we dig into our basketball discussion. The Dallas Mavericks plan to sign Kemba Walker and will be releasing Facu Campazzo to make that happen. Your immediate thoughts?
Well, this seems immediately in your ministry, in your wheelhouse, considering your affinity for Kemba Walker one point in time in life, and your thoughts on Campazzo.
Yeah, like one's just better at basketball, particularly if they're healthy. So I think that's a positive offer. But oh no, in all seriousness, I do think, and there's probably going to be a deeper conversation on Dallas later, spoiler alert, but I do think if Kemba is reasonably healthy or whatever his version of healthy is right now, just the blend of pick and roll craft and pull up shooting should be a nice shot in the arm. Add another creator to the Dallas stable so Luka doesn't have to do as much. And again, like, I don't think Kemba's going to be a 25-minute-per-game guy. It might be 16 to 18. But just having another guy that can make on-ball decisions for Dallas, I think, would be a positive. And if the defense holds enough while he's on the floor, like, I think he'll be a pretty solid signing on the margins for Dallas.
No, I think it's a really good landing spot for this version of Kemba Walker. And I don't mean that disrespectfully, but this is a place where he can be Kemba Walker without having to be Kemba Walker every single night. I think that was part of the issue in New York to me, is he had to be that level for that to work. Here, he can maybe see if he's got it. If he does, it turns up. If he doesn't, you have other options. So I think that's going to be a good spot for him. We'll talk about Dallas a little bit because I've been doing some thinking. That is a tease. Look at me, B-plus player.
Good stuff.
But overall, I just think it's a good mindset. They need someone else who can create, someone else who can shoot, someone else who can dribble. You wonder how much of it's going to be based on Kemba's pull-up. But if he has enough juice, he can push in transition every now and then. He can get in the paint, attack closeouts if the ball is moving. Like, there's things he can do. I have some questions about who's he going to play with, what the lineups do. But if he's going to be playing with the second unit, that's a boost for them just off rip.
Yeah, I like it on the surface. Again, I want to see how healthy Kemba is. He will be joining here. So wonder what the conditioning is going to be like, how quickly they can get him ramped up. But that's something for me to keep an eye on. While you have the floor, what teams have caught your eye this week?
Well, Nikias, I'm doing some thinking on that. Okay. So it's a tough time in the league right now. It's full of teams just getting after it. And I was looking at the standings. Look at the West. Like, the difference between the 1 seed and the 11 seed is 4 games. The difference between the 3 seed and the 10 seed is 2 games. The difference between the 4 seed and the 8 seed is half a game. Like, Boston and Milwaukee have clearly separated themselves out east. But the rest, the difference between 3 and 10 is 3 games. The difference between 4 and 11 is 2.5 games. Good basketball is being had, but it is swinging up and down. And I'm having a tough time. Maybe it's because we do this pod every week. But it's not so much that no team has impressed me. It's just that we're learning a lot about these teams and they're kind of swinging. Like, this is the part of the season where you're understanding, okay, this may be what this team is. Oh, they're facing someone that this does not work against. Oh, what do we do with this?
Right.
Or natural come downs. Like, we're seeing some of these come downs. Wizards back down to 500. Sixers kind of rising. Pacers kind of rising, but kind of not. Bulls, every now and then they show a flash, then it's like, nope. Pelicans hanging around. Kings, uh-oh. Are we sure uh-oh, though? Jazz, what happened? Oh, here comes Golden State. Like, it just kind of feels like there's like an ebb and flow right now, like a reaction to the start.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm off, but that's kind of where I'm.
Oh, I think that's fair. So, I mean, zooming out, your answer is just yes to the teams that have been.
I'll give a hat tip to the Warriors. Give a hat tip to the Warriors. Clay, his belief is stronger than your doubt. But I like that they have tweaked the lineups, adjusting the rotation a little bit.
You like
Draymond? It feels like they are. Yeah, I like. It feels like they're closer to what they can be or what they want to be. It feels like they have not only found a way to blend in their starters with the bench, but that's kind of unlocked a little bit of lineup versatility and it simplified things. So at the 5, it's either going to be Looney or it's going to be Draymond or it's going to be Jermichael Green. That's it. But now we can kind of mix and match some other guys around that to where we kind of have a base that we can trust without sacrificing anything else, which is kind of that weird thing they had to figure out. Like, putting Draymond and Wiggins out there at the start of the second and fourth quarters, I like that for their defense. Like, I think that gives them an energy. I think that gives them an offensive flow. I think being able to play Clay with different guys, playing a lot of different guards together, works. I think Lamb just gives you a we know what you're going to do type of vibe to him. And I think it does make it easier for Jermichael Green, who I know I have said things about.
It's one way to put it.
But it allows him, hey, your job is to do this on defense, do this on offense, and that's it. And now Kuminga can slide in at the 4. It's just a lot more simple. And it helps when Clay's shooting and playing like this. Wiggins is shooting and playing like this. Steph Curry is losing his mind. It does kind of stink that it feels like it came at the expense of the young guys. And that's kind of like an unfortunate part of this. Yeah. Because I don't even necessarily know if they were terrible. Like, I know the whole world is going to dump on James Wiseman. Y'all have a blast. But this is a tough scenario. I think Draymond talked about it in a press conference where it's just like, we talked about it too. These guys have to play at a certain level for this to work for this team. And this is a team that can't afford some of those mistakes. So it's kind of like a pick and choose. Like, okay, we can handle what you do for a couple weeks. But it can't be both y'all out there.
Yeah.
So I want to see how that eventually looks like. Are they able to kind of stabilize things and then maybe add someone else back to the mix? Maybe Moody gets those Lamb minutes or something like that. But I think if they can find their base with this team, because to me, it wasn't completely terrible performance. Could have shot better. Defense wasn't great. And their rotation's rough. They tweak that. They get back to their base. Now they can mix some more guys in. I think they get back humming. So it's good to see them salute that. And a salute for the Pistons.
Ah, salute for the Pistons.
Look, man, you went up back-to-back in Denver and Utah on the road. I'm going to tip my cap to you. And that's why you need to compete for 82 games in the NBA regular season. Because anything can happen.
No, you didn't parlay that back into the... You are on one today. Quick Warriors question for you before I go. On the Draymond and Wiggins, but more so Draymond with the second unit, help stabilize things on both ends of the floor. Do you feel like that's kind of, they've made other tweaks to the rotation, but do you feel like that's the big tweak that has helped stabilize things? Do you think that's going to be something that is long-term? Do you think that's just the pattern now? Or do you think if they incorporate, you know, incorporate Moody back in, or if they get better play from Kuminga, more consistent play from Kuminga, they're able to tweak the lineups again to get to what they really wanted to do?
I think they can tweak the lineups again. The question is going to be, who do they feel comfortable with? Because technically, and I had pulled up one, I went old school and just kind of typed out the rotation. Don't judge me. But it was a lot of, you know, second quarter Dante Poole, Lamb, Wiggins, Draymond. So that kind of tells me we don't necessarily want to play two bigs in that space. And one of the people that would be coming back is a big. So that kind of alters that. So I think they would stick with this. I just don't know how they would do it personnel-wise. You know, would this just be less minutes for Looney overall? Will this be no Jermichael at the five? Like, I think Moody you can insert in quicker than Wiseman.
Yeah, I think it's an easier plug. I think there are, I want to say more question marks on the wing, but like there are more minutes to grab at the wing than I think in that front court with what the Warriors want to accomplish and how versatile they want to be on both ends in the front court. Like, I just, like, we've talked about it on the pod. I've written about it. Like, I just kind of feel for James Wiseman in this situation, honestly, because he just hasn't gotten to play a lot of basketball over the last 2.5, 3 years, even dating back to the college stint, to where it was only a handful of games. This was always going to be an uphill climb for him. And this is before you add in extra expectation when the Warriors win a title last season. It's like, okay, well, if you're going to play now, you have to hit. Or we can't afford to waste this season of Stephen Curry or waste this era of Stephen Curry basketball. And again, this is heading into the year. You add in Steph just playing at a historic level right now, the pressure rises even more. And so now it's, as you point out, like Draymond going to the second unit, kind of simplifying things for Jermichael Green on both ends of the floor. Now it's like, what is the place for Wiseman? Like, he's getting the G League minutes now, getting those important reps for him. Can he play well enough to warrant cracking the rotation again for the Warriors? Not that he's a bad player, but with where they are and what they're trying to get to, like, what is the portion for him?
In my mind, I think Golden State is trying to get themselves back to a level where they could now bring him back and play through some of those things. It's just evident right now, no matter what finger you want to point to, they can't play through some of these things at the current moment. So I think they need to get right before they bring him back. It's kind of like the, no, you need to go, I need to work on myself, come back home type deal.
Wow. Wait a minute. hey, I'm gonna.
I got him, folks.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that one. I ain't even gonna hold you. I am just going to segue over to my side of the table here. I would also like to start with a hat tip. The Philadelphia 76ers. Winners of three of their last four. You are already shaking your head. But winners of three of their last four. The one loss coming against the fighting Nick Richards in Charlotte was in attendance for that game. That was fun. But in all seriousness, I've just been impressed with the energy that they're playing with. As cliche as that sounds, it feels like the ball is moving a little bit more in the half court. There are portions of games where the half court tempo feels better than it did when they had the stars in, to where it felt like, here's our initial action. If it doesn't work, Joel, go. James Harden, go. Or after that first couple week stretch, Tyrese Maxey, do your thing. It feels like there's a little more optionality in the half court, partially because it kind of has to. Like, when your number one option goes from, hey, Joel Embiid, you're drawing double teams, to Tobias Harris, who you can use in a multitude of ways, but you're not drawing the same defensive attention. You kind of need your other guys to step up and fill those boards. That's why I've enjoyed, again, just the general side to side with them and how they're moving the ball. But you hone in, De'Anthony Melton knocking down pull-ups. That's pretty helpful. Shake Milton getting downhill, knocking down jumpers as well. It feels like he's found the rhythm. I don't think he's 22 points a game like he has been over his last six or seven games. But you give him a consistent dose of on-ball reps, and you take some of the pressure off him. They need him to step up, but ultimately, like, hey, you're not the star of the team. We just need you to fill your role. He can do that, and he's done that during this stretch. Tobias Harris, big second half against Brooklyn on Tuesday. He's plugged in fine. It's just been a lot of fun. And, like, this is something that you pretty much called, like, hey, keep an eye on the Sixers and Doc Rivers with a team that doesn't have the same level of expectation or with some guys out. I kind of wonder, I'll pose this question to you, like, with the half court in particular, I kind of get the vibe of like, hey, this is kind of what I want it to look like, but I can't because I have better talent. And so we don't have to do all that, for lack of a better way to phrase it. Like, do you get those kind of vibes from a scheme standpoint?
Kind of. I get more of the vibes as we have no other choice.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what you hit on. But I think it is something to talk about when it comes to coaching. Because I think a lot of times it just gets, whatever you see, you just assume that that's the plan. When in all honesty, you might have seven or eight things that you would like to do, but we have a post-up threat. We need to get him going. We have a guard who likes the ball in their hands and likes to operate in pick and roll. We need to cater towards that. So there's a balance of what we want to do schematically, what we want to see philosophically, and then what we kind of have to do to make sure our team works or these guys are set up for success or what's the best version for our team. That's why I think I mention it every year during the preseason. There's a whole bunch of ideas that people have until it doesn't work. And now it's like, okay, what do we do now? That's why I always credit Spo because, okay, this is what I have and this is what will make us the best version of what we can be. Let's see what this does. And that's not always the easiest thing to do coaching wise, especially when you have very talented players. Not even just because it's easy. It's just like, I should probably get that person the ball, you know, or else we're going to yell about 15 minutes of why didn't they touch the ball? You know what I mean? So it becomes, yeah. it's a tricky balancing act. As far as Philadelphia goes, look, man, you give Doc Rivers this kind of team, he's going to do something with it. He always does. I know all the jokes and memes are there, but if you remember that Clippers team that no one thought would be good and then all of a sudden was good, it's like, this is kind of his bag. And I thought I was going to get booed for it. But the Sixers became everything they needed to be because they had no other choice. All right, man. But we have to defend. We have to move the ball. We have to attack consistently. We don't have openings. We can't rely on X, Y, or Z. And the other part is, these guys are playing with aggression. And that's some of the most dangerous stuff in the league. If you turn on a game, you'll hear when a guy's out or multiple guys are out, how tough of a game that is because you're not ready for that. You haven't prepared for that version of that team. You likely prepared for the top stars and whatever they do behind it. When you have a team where there's a moving target, the ball's moving, those guys are hungry and aggressive, it just looks different. The transition pushes look different. They're not passive or waiting. You know what I mean? Even look at like a guy like Daniel House looks different. George Niang looks completely different during this stretch. He's back to letting it fly. B-Ball Paul going to work. Montrezl Harrell directing traffic. But these guys are stepping into different things. Korkmaz taking handoffs and making plays. So this is an ability or a time for them to show what they can do, which is always good if you're a coach. And you can kind of get some of that buy-in back. So now, as your guys come back, hey, man, we're cooking. And we got Joel back. As opposed to, oh, man, we got Joel back. We can go back to this.
Yeah.
That's the bridge they have to hit.
I got you. Can I just say on the Paul Reed front, you have just ruined him for me. You haven't ruined him for me. But, like, every time he's – if I'm watching a game or watching possessions with him and I see him, like, at the free throw line in a drop, I'm just like, oh, God, when this guard comes off, he better do something. I know Steve's going to say something. I know he's going to have some kind of smoke. He's going to ruin the fun. A couple of possessions like that in the Nets game, I was like, oh, no. Paul, he played very well in that game overall. But
he's not bad. But he just has a flaw. Like, we just got to acknowledge when players have flaws. Like, that's my only beef when people are just like, oh my God, this person's so amazing. And I'm like, what about this? And it's like, no, don't talk about that. And I'm like, well, can we talk about it? Are you, nope. Okay. Now I got to point out when he gets smoked so you can see it.
We can both acknowledge that Paul Reed in the drop isn't the most ideal thing. However, the switches, though, they've been hitting during this stretch.
No, he's active. He is active. The only thing, my only issue with him in a drop is when he's just going backwards and it's like, please impact the ball. You are tall. Tall Reed.
Paul Reed. That's the first shot that we're getting up in this one. That's the first official shot that we're getting up in this one. We're not counting the actual first shot. I wasn't expecting that one at all. That was during the pregame shoot around. I was going to let that one rock. Anyway, hat tip to the Sixers for their stretch. And we are spinning the block once again for the second team. The Miami Heat popping for me.
Wait a minute. I was just here on this very podcast with esteemed guest Zach Lowe. And y'all spent 17 minutes talking about how the Heat were toast. I didn't even have enough time to get my standard, hey, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt because it's Spo, point in. And now the Heat are in the teams that impressed. What is this, Bam Adebayo scoring 30? What is this?
well, Bam scoring helps. But first and foremost, I would just like to say, I said on said podcast that I am a little bit concerned. I wasn't out on Miami. So I was a little bit concerned. The injury issues. We talked about the half-court offense being a little wonky early in the year. It still remains wonky right now. They just got Tyler Hero back. He hasn't shot well, but he has played well overall. But I said I have some concerns. What is it going to look like? We haven't seen much of Lowry, Hero, Bam, and Butler together. By the time Hero comes back, like, who's going to be out? We still haven't seen Jimmy Butler yet. So those are most of my concerns. And then the size stuff. But I don't know they fix that without a trade. But at any rate, 3-game winning streak following a 4-game losing streak because, of course, Miami bounces back. This is what they do. 2 wins over the Wizards. A solid win on Sunday over the Atlanta Hawks. I am intrigued with the defense with this group. The Heat running zone is not a surprise. The Heat running a lot of zone, also not a surprise. The Heat averaging 47 zone possessions a game during this winning streak, that's a lot. The Heat having, per synergy, 579 zone possessions this season after logging 653 last year, that's a whole lot. And it's their traditional 2-3. It's their matchup zone. They opened up the Hawks game on Sunday with a 1-3-1. I was like, wait a minute. Are we bringing 2K14 back? This is fun. Let's see what it looks like. Opening possession is a Trae Young lob to John Collins that he cuts from the right corner. It's like, well, that's why you got to be a little careful in the 1-3-1, especially if Kyle Lowry is on the back end instead of Bam Adebayo. For some reason, he was in the middle of that, but they switched that up as the game went on. But they are living in zone in a way that a Spoelstra team never has. And my entry level just lies on what is the logical extreme of this? Because you think about it on the offensive end, like, all right, teams want to space the floor. They want to shoot more threes. And then next thing you know, you have the D'Antoni Rockets and they're bombing 50 a game. I wonder, like, how far Spo brings the zone usage to. Like, what the level is. What's the ceiling on the zone usage?
I don't think that it will ever be – I didn't mean to cut you off. I don't think it will ever be the base, but I do think he knows this is a curveball. This is a curveball we're very good at. We rotate like it's man darn near anyways. So this is something I feel like we can throw off to get teams out of rhythm.
Yeah,
and we'll just keep throwing it out there, you know, kind of like a bend, don't break. Almost like a, what's a good, like a team that is good at drop, but won't get out of drop even if you score. So now it's like, now what?
Yeah.
Which tends to happen. So like, it's hard for teams to go bend, don't break. But sometimes if you just stick with it long enough, they'll forget that they're roasting you and start doing other stuff. So I think this is probably the highest. Like I never felt in a perfect world he'd probably want to play this much zone. But with the personnel you have, you know what you can get out of it. You know, I guess my question to you is, do you feel like the zone is the defense right now? or do you feel like the zone is their best option?
It feels like, you're right, it's not the base, but it's feeling base adjacent. Like even bouncing off of the curveball example, like it feels less like this is the Heat's curveball and more so like this is their middle reliever that's going to be in for three innings. And it's like, okay, so you're not the starter, but also there's a lot of pitches that you're throwing out right now. And so that's why I'm just kind of wondering, again, what's the ceiling? And with this much zone, it's like, okay, is he doing this much because it's working? Or is he doing this much because he's worried about the actual base? And this is the cover, and also it's working right now. And so just trying to parse through which side of the aisle he's on has been fun. But in the meantime, like, again, it's work. Teams are shooting basically 40% or lower against the Heat in the zone. And so it's hard to argue with the results. And when you throw in just how many different ways they can get into their zone and the fact that they will start a position in the zone, it's like, all right, well, there's 12 on the clock. We've blown up whatever your initial action was. Now let's match up. Now we're just switching everything. Or, oh, this is turning into a side pick and roll and you're attacking Bam. Okay, Bam's back in the drop. We talked a little bit about that a couple weeks ago. Like, hey, this is the most drop usage we've seen from Bam pretty much since the bubble year. And so being able to mix that in is enough to where it's not the base, but it's still the foundation of a lot of what they're doing defensively. That just intrigues me. I'm not saying it's bad because, again, it's work. They are winning games. I just wonder where it's going. And then on defense. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Sorry.
I was about to flip to the offense, man. So if you had more defense thoughts.
Oh, no. I was going to say defensively, it just kind of feels like, you know, that college football team that just runs the ball a lot. Like, we're just going to wear you down.
Are you talking Georgia this. Tech?
I was thinking more of like peak Stanford when it was just maximum annoying, where it's like first and 10, second and 5, first down, first and 10, second and 2, third and 2, first down.
Yeah.
Like, wait, like we have to keep doing this. But you know what I mean? Like, I don't think most teams want to keep doing the zone thing and executing against the zone, especially because Miami's so good at rotating and closing out behind it. So, yeah, you know.
Thanks. And see, you saw that in the Hawks game in particular, to where they got threes on like three of the first five possessions. And then as the quarter went on, it's like, oh, we got to keep swinging it. We got to keep doing this. Now we got some early shots. Now Miami's able to get in transition a little bit. Now you're set again. And now, okay, well, they're not in zone this time. Now it's just, they're just switching everything. That's cool. We can try to play with this. Wait, they're back to the zone. Wait, now they're pressing full court and dropping into the zone. It's like, what is happening right now? So I'm loving the variety. I'm just like, okay, is there going to be a team or a stretch of games where it's like, okay, we're coming out in zone, they just blast it? I think it's kind of where I don't want to say I'm worried, but I'm just kind of keeping an eye. Offensively, this has been such a fun Bam stretch. This has been such a fun Bam stretch. I'm not going to use the A word, but we'll say he is taking lots of shots. He is looking to call his own number. And he's had some good results. Big game against Washington, another big game. I think 38 against Washington in the second matchup, 32 against Atlanta. And Miami's finding different ways to get it to him. Like, it's cross screens into an elbow touch and letting him go instead of it turning into just a traditional post split. Like, that's fun that they're just letting, like, no, this play is for you this time. We're not letting you set things up. Like, it's funny, again, mentioning the Atlanta game, funny watching him get the cross screen underneath into the elbow touch and he gets the attack. And then they run the same thing. It's like, oh, now Kyle Lowry just at the elbow. He's running the post split stuff. And it's Max Strus and Caleb Martin coming together and they're cutting every which way. It's like, it's just fun that the way Miami is able to alternate what their hubs are or who their hubs are and what they want to get to. But back to Bam. Living at the free throw line, getting downhill, really winning in that like 7 to 12 foot range with floaters and push shots and turnaround jumpers. And I think the big question with him in the half court against size, it's like, how does he win against size? Can he finish over your Brook Lopez's? Can he finish over, like, to a lesser degree, but can he finish over your Clint Capellas? Can you finish over your Joel Embiid's? And the natural counter to that has been like, okay, well, he needs the one, if they're going to sag off in a drop and they're just bigger than him, he's going to flow in the handoff with the movement shooters or the pick and roll threats and try to get offense that way. But for Bam in particular, it's been, I have to knock down jumpers. And this version where he is just kind of cashing in those shots from 12 feet and in, there isn't much you can do. Because if he's splashing those in and you don't creep up, he can continue to splash those in, or he can step out and flow into those handoffs and get the movement going. And that helps juice the half court attack. And if you do step up, that's where the speed advantage kicks in. And this is why I've consistently said he is the walking mismatch if he's able to really hone that, if he's really to grab that and own that. Because there are multiple uses with him. And just from his skill set and his athleticism, that blend, there isn't much you can do with Bam when he finds that right mix. And the last three games in particular have kind of been the glimpse of this is what the mix looked like, to where he can make other guys threats, but also he can just get his own shot and get his own and flowing from there. So I think just my major thoughts with this Heat team during the stretch is the zone, the defense in general, and what Bam's been able to do as of late. It's been a lot of fun. How have you felt about Bam recently?
You know how I feel about Bam.
I do know how you feel about Bam.
For me, it's more so the fact that he is just kind of going for it. The roles are opening back up, which is key, especially in the Atlanta game. Bam, when he's able to roll, which teams have taken away, is a different person offensively. And I think that's kind of allowed that aggression to show a little bit more. I always like when there's just not a tell, you know, when there's no tell on when he's going to attack and when he's not. And so when you have Bam setting screens for a Tyler Hero off ball, that helps a lot. You know what I mean? And he just feels more comfortable and confident during this stretch of basketball, which I think Miami needs overall. So it's been good progress. But again, if he can be that on the short roll, that opens a lot up for Miami.
That it does. On that note, one thing that's kind of bugging me is probably too strong, but I'll just say bugging me. Miami has gotten some good stuff out of Bam as a pick and roll screener with an empty corner, particularly with him and Tyler Hero. That's generally a good look for them. Wasn't super successful this week, but zoom out, like that's a pretty fruitful setup for them. It feels like they roll Bam towards the middle a lot when they set up the empty corner. And I don't love him rolling into help. It just feels like you are setting him up for failure, considering some of the size issues he may have with whoever the center is dropping back. But I also understand why you want him to do that, because he is such a good passer and a good decision maker and a quick processor. If you are able to set up some cuts behind that, like he can make those short roll reads, or he can just make those kicks if they're open. And I think they want to juice the offense in that way. It's just something that I'm trying to monitor. Like how often, if they do set up an empty corner, like how often is he rolling to the empty side and just saying, hey, this is yours if you receive the pass, versus we're going to roll you middle. Let's see if you can collapse and open up some kickouts there. Or if Tyler Hero or Kyle Lowry is the ball handler, like, okay, I just have this side to work with for a jump shot. And I wonder if they're able to find the blend there.
No, I'll keep an eye on it, but sometimes that's an automatic trigger, especially if teams are trying to keep it on the side. So I'll keep an eye on that. But I mean, if you're telling me Bam Adebayo is going to see that he has AJ Griffin on him and decide I'm posting up right now, give me the ball, that's what you like to see.
That is indeed what you'd like to see. Bam was an Eastern Conference Player of the Week's finalist, did not win the award. They went to Giannis. You know who else was a finalist for the award? Or who else was in the discussion for the award?
Who?
Caleb Martin. Did you have that on the bingo card?
No.
Yeah, averaged 18-7-3 this past week, a couple of steals, shooting 44% from three, nearly 60% from the field overall. Having a lot of fun attacking closeouts, though he does hesitate on the catch sometimes. That's a little bit annoying. But no, the downhill juice has been very fruitful for Miami. Then on the other end, talked about the zone usage. He's been at the top of whatever zone Miami's wanted to play, particularly when they press. Again, once again, referencing the Atlanta game, him picking up Trae Young's very similar to what he did during the playoff series last year, getting that assignment. Caleb Martin's a good player. Like, he doesn't have the size and bulk of PJ Tucker, which could cause some issues on the glass and, again, picking up guys in transition. But he's been good for Miami, and he's been really good during this stretch. Multiple 20-point games in the stretch as well. That's been fun. quick shout out to Dwayne Dedman, who has also played well during this stretch. Not getting back on the island, but it is worth noting that he has been a stabilizing force for the second unit over the past week or so. So I just wanted to give the quick hat tip there. I think that's all I have in terms of shouts this week. Shout out to Philly, shout out to Miami. Boston's just really freaking good. I will say that once again. What's left for there to say for us to say about Boston right now? It feels like the defense is coming around and the offense remains a buzzsaw.
Well, the thing is, their defense is coming around, but it's going to be a problem in the playoffs. Like, that's the scary part. Like, whatever it is right now, A, they're going to be better in the playoffs, and B, they're going to have a lineup in multiple lineups where it's like, where do we go? That's going to be gross. Their offensive ball movement has been really good. Their flow has been really good. Jason Tatum's been really good. But they've gotten the buy-in. Like, multiple guys are coming in and out of the lineup. Like, Peyton Pritchard has done the Energizer Bunny thing like 3 or 4 times this year. But he flipped that whole Kings game just very quickly. But I think everyone knows who they are, and they just do their job.
It's been good stuff. Like, I don't know what you do with this team at full tilt. And I definitely don't know what you do against this team if Derek White is just shooting 40% from three now. On solid volume. Like, if you add the playmaking, the cutting, the screening, the screen navigation, the contest after screen navigating, some of the weak backline rotations he can make as a guard. Oh yeah, you can't leave me open anymore either.
You know, you bring up a good point, and I think it's funny because Boston is basically taking the guys you may want to help off of and found a way to make it work. Like, hey, Derek White can also shoot now, and he can have the ball in his hands, and if not, he can screen. We did that before. And then Marcus Smart can have the ball in his hands and he can screen and he can post up. So good luck with that.
This team is so freaking good, dog. And to that point, Marcus Smart also shooting 44% from three over the past week. Like, it's just insane what Boston's been able to do. And they're doing so, again, not at full strength. When Robert Williams comes back and adds that interior presence on both ends, good luck. I don't know what you do. I just don't know what you do with Boston. They are playing some really good basketball. Also, not going to hang here, but Phoenix also on a win streak. They continue to churn out wins. So
there's a lot of agendas you're pushing right now, bud.
I wouldn't say that.
I'm coming with it next week.
Oh, okay.
what's the next agenda you're going to hit? Let me figure out which team is making you think, buddy.
Well, we can transition to that segment. The team I had is New Orleans.
This is not going to help your narrative? No.
I don't have anything bad to say about New Orleans. It's more so as I was trying to prep for this particular segment of the pod, like, with all things regarding NBA season, it's, hey, this game looks interesting. Let me watch this. Or I haven't watched this team in a minute. Let me check out, see what's going on here. Or just putting in a query and seeing what pops. And for me, it's like, hey, let me see who the top defenses are through this part of the season. Because as you mentioned up top, there are a lot of teams bundled up together. Like, it's still early enough to where the numbers are kind of wonky. Let's see what's happening. New Orleans has been a top 10 defense all year long. And we talked about the downside of what they're trying to do scheme-wise when we talked about them a couple weeks ago, particularly when the Pacers just got them out of here. But I'm just like, okay, we are a quarter of the way through. And they're sixth in defense. That intrigues me. And so then I dig a little deeper. Like, all right, how are they doing in the half court? Because I know what their base is. They want to have JV at the level. If Larry Nance is in, they'll have him at the level sometimes. But ultimately, they want to switch more with that. Like, okay, let's see where they're in the half court. They're 19th in half court defense. And so my first thought is, like, that's a wide disparity. Because you think about the other end, like, we talked about this with Toronto last year, where it's like, hey, they're a top 10 offense, but a lot of that is just the transition offense drive again. And in the half court, they were bad. And we'll see if they are able to counter that when the playoffs come, and ultimately they weren't. It's weird to see that kind of swing on the defensive end, where you're sixth overall, you're 19th in the half court. But then I thought back to the season preview that we did with them. And I was like, hey, I think this offense is going to be really good if healthy. If the defense can be like 18th or 20th, I think they're going to be fine. And they're 19th in the half court defense. Like, they're doing their job. And then I look again or dig a little deeper. And they're not allowing many shots at the rim at all. seventh in rim rate allowed. They're 24th in three-point rate. Like, okay, that's kind of high. And then you look at their percentages, allowing under 34% from three right now. That's fourth in the league. That was 37% last year. That was a bottom five mark in the league. And so I just wonder, like, is it just teams are missing? Like, what's happening here?
This feels like one of those shot regression arguments on Twitter.
I don't even think it's that. I was like, okay, let's look at some even fancier numbers. I looked at the contest rate. Like, okay, are they contesting shots better? It's like it's gone up like 1/10 of a point from last year.
Okay.
Like, okay, that hasn't materially changed. And I was just like, is this defense this good?
So you have no Nikai analytics to support them being six outside of rim rate?
It's not allowing a lot of shots at the rim because when they get there, they're 29th in terms of field goal percentage allowed. So it's really bad if they get there, but they don't let you get there. And then the three-point shots are just not falling against them. And I don't want to phrase it like that, like it's just a whole bunch of luck. But like in terms of what's changed from last year to this year, it's a large dip in three-point percentage allowed.
I got you. I mean, it's an interesting point. I mean, they got a lot of size. They got a lot of length. They don't necessarily give up a lot of the automatics to the rim. The threes, the concerning part about the threes is, again, they're based on help and rotation, so those are going to be open sometimes. But without those numbers, I guess that just means they got that dog in them.
Yes. Well, you have Jose Alvarado, and you also have Herb Jones, and you also...
Do you want to talk about Herb real quick?
What does that mean? Go ahead.
No, I mean, I was just watching a little bit of the New Orleans-Memphis game, and Dylan Brooks was just standing there and just came off a down screen, didn't get touched by Herb Jones. It's unusual behavior.
I will say this has not been last year's Herb consistently. And I think that's a fair thing to say. But like,
he's fine, but he's definitely showing some of those things where, you know, you see your friend and you text him, hey, you all right?
Ah. I see. This is a second one of the podcast, huh? I see. I feel you. But no, like, I think broader, it's just, again, if the Pelicans are average defensively or slightly below average, I think the offense will be good enough to carry it at full strength. Now, the other thing is, like, when do they get it full strength? I think Zion and Brandon Ingram played, I think, 10 or 11 games together at this point. CJ McCollum is out right now. Like, I would like for them to get the full assortment and have an extended run. So we can really see what it's going to be on both ends of the floor. But I guess I'm just trying to figure out, like, is it this? Because if New Orleans is solid, if they're firmly a top 10 defense, then I am changing the calculus on this team. So that's kind of where I'm intrigued. Again, I don't have, like, smoke for New Orleans or anything like that. It's just like, okay, this is much better than I thought. And, like, even with some of the numbers you can point to, even if they regress, they're still going to be better than the level that I wanted them to be at for them to be a good team this year. So it's kind of, I'm in the early process of like recalibrating my expectations for them.
Ah, so, okay. I see where you're at. They made you think like, oh, wait, this might actually be the thing. I get it. Did you know they're two games out of first place in the West?
Yeah. Like, I think that two games out of first place, I think they're fourth in net rating right now. It's like, no, like they're good.
And they can get better.
Yeah.
Like, scary times, folks.
Like, keep an eye on New Orleans. Like, I like genuinely do some podcast planning on the air. Like, genuinely, I want to do like the Pelicans deep dive very soon. Because like, they are an interesting bunch. They're a talented bunch. They're an interesting bunch.
Okay. I'll keep that in my notes.
There we go. So that's who's making me think. Because if they're that on defense, like, I know the offense has upside. And that we got to talk about how deep the run for the Pelicans can be if this is what it is. But that's all I have on that front. Steve, who is the team that is making you think? Team or teams, rather?
The Dallas Mavericks.
Ah, let's have some fun.
I believe they've lost four in a row, five of the last six. Three-game road trip. Did not pick up a W. Lost at Boston, lost at Toronto, lost at Milwaukee. I was very intrigued by this trip because Dallas has a formula that we've seen them succeed with. These are teams that tend to have defenses that don't cooperate or vibe specifically with what Dallas wants to attempt to do, whether it's by switching, whether it's by activity, whether it's size, whether it's length. So I want to kind of see what the test would be. And I am definitely intrigued by Dallas as a whole. They're at a what I feel like is a crossroads, and they're 9-10. They have a formula that works. Just got to the Western Conference Finals. We know Luka as a pressure point hurts a lot of different schemes. Their defense, when it's active, can cause a lot of problems. I think what we're seeing, and there's just really is not a ton of margin for error for this group. And overall, and I say this with someone who thinks, I think Dallas would be tougher in the playoffs than in the regular season, especially this version. But on those nights where Luka doesn't have it offensively, can they overcome it? On those nights when they aren't hitting shots that are being created, can they overcome it? On those nights where the defense isn't all the way locked in or there isn't a true game plan to lock in on, can they overcome it? We saw Boston throw switches at them. We saw Toronto go two on the ball for the majority of the game and have success with it. We saw Milwaukee stick with the drop and be at the level and find some sort of thing that they could live with. And so for me, are we at a point where not do they have enough, but what's their base? How good is it to be able to get teams in rotation if you can't make them pay afterwards? And what got me concerned, my bad, the end of the Toronto game, a play that you phenomenally broke down on the Bird app, we watched that game together. Because they were slicing two on the ball up. Toronto was putting two on the ball. Dallas was slicing it up. Late in the game, Maxi Kleber catches it, swings it to Reggie Bullock, who has a three, but he swings it. And I'm like, you got to let that fly. That's what the point of this was for. And then I watched them play Milwaukee. And they get Milwaukee to rotate. I think Dorian Finney-Smith drives a closeout. He kicks it, I think, to, I want to say, it was one of those guards. Dimwitty. Swings to Dimwitty. Dimwitty has a shot. He does an extra pass to Tim Hardaway Jr., who also has a shot. He drives the closeout, has another shot, and then he tries to swing it to someone else, and it's a turnover. And it's like, well, this can't be part of the math. I don't know how we get there. They miss Jalen Brunson. And I say that with Spencer Dinwiddie playing very, very well. He's playing hard. He's doing what he's asked to do. He's scoring. He's shooting. He fits into what they need him to do. It's just a lot different when he has to be that guy in this system. I don't know if defenses are going to change what they do based on his success. Like, I don't know if you can sprinkle in a Spencer Dinwiddie post-up. Like, he's a good player, but it's in a different way. Like, I don't think he finishes plays at the end of the clock the same. I don't know if he's getting a paint touch every single night that draws help every single night.
Yeah.
I don't know if teams are looking at him and Christian Wood and pick and roll in the second unit and just saying, I think I'm good with the drop. It's either going to be a Dinwiddie pull up or it's going to be Wood popping. But those are the outcomes. So how do we get him going? How do we get that going? And then overall, and I went through a deep, I fell through a Dallas hole. So just keep me on target. It's my fault. I opened the Bird app this morning and saw the quote where Luka was like, man, I liked the shots we were getting in the third quarter because Christian Wood started the third quarter and Jason Kidd was like, yeah, we couldn't get no stops. And talking to a whole bunch of Dallas folks trying to figure things out. So let's go even bigger picture in it, guys.
Okay.
You have a formula that works. You have pieces that can make it work or do make it work. You know it's off. You know what it could be. What do you trust? I got laughed at because I said the big man rotation was crowded. But in theory, it's crowded. You have Christian Wood. You have Dwight Powell. You have Maxi Kleber. You have Dave Burt. You have JaVale McGee. Some of those pieces helped contribute to your success last year. One can elevate you in a way, offensively at the very least, that will make you a whole different team. The other fits a role that probably doesn't help you as much. And if you don't think that the Dallas Mavericks are not searching to figure out how to get back to that formula that they found, I watched that Milwaukee Bucks game. And you know who three of the people I saw on the court were at the same time?
Who were they?
Christian Wood, Maxi Kleber, Davis Bertan, a.k.a. Dave Burt.
Played them together. Was that and against a big lineup for Milwaukee?
Man, not that big. It flowed into Dave Burt and JaVale McGee together. I'll put it that way.
Ah, I see.
Trying to find time for these folks. So I think the Christian Wood debate is something. Like, I think Jason Kidd knows what Christian Woods brings to the table. And I think the unfortunate part for him is what Christian Wood brings to the table is something that almost everyone can see and understand. It's offense. It's offensive firepower. I think he knows he has to play him. I don't think Jason Kidd likes how much he has to play him.
Has to play, yeah.
I don't think he likes that. And I went into it thinking, like, I don't know how much he's willing to make that offense-defense trade-off. Because Wood will get 30-plus minutes, but it's clearly a game where they know they need the scoring or he has it going. I think the issue, and I'm just going off here, but, like, when you have options as a coach, it can be hard to stick with one thing. And I think Christian Wood has some sequences sometimes that don't help him. Like, it'll just be pick and roll, did one thing, on the other end, drive, didn't get a foul call, then fouls on the next one. And it's like, well, wait a minute. What are we doing here? Mm-hmm. But, you know, that like the coaching aspect is interesting to me because it ties into, like, one of the most dangerous things in this league is the assumption of success, Nikias. You can never assume that what worked one year is going to automatically carry over and work the next. And so many times you see the assumption that the success you achieved is who you are and not just a payoff for what you did. And I think part of the issue for Dallas is they had that defense baked in. Like, our defense is going to be at this level. We just need to do this. And I was watching that Dallas-Milwaukee game. I asked this very same question to myself multiple times. Is it Christian Wood on defense? Is it Dallas's defense just not being good? Or is it both of them hurting each other? Because there are so many possessions where Christian Wood will do his job, but they're off behind him. There's an overhelp. Now they're in rotation. Now they're trying to fly around. Then you compound where he's in space guarding someone. He closes out and he gets beat. Now they have to help cover him. It goes back and forth. And they've got to find a coverage for him. If it's going to be switched, if it's going to be at the level, it's going to be dropped, do one. I shouldn't watch a game and see three in 3 minutes. I know you're searching.
You can't do that with Christian Wood.
You got to give him an opportunity. Make it simple for him. But yeah, it's like, and then that ties into, he's searching for defense because he knows defense will get them the results they need. I think with Luka, he knows the offense will come. Whether you agree with that or not, I understand. At what point does he pick a poison and say, hey, we're just going to be really, really good offensively and try and figure it out defensively, which is ironically what they did last year. When they figured out, okay, this thing isn't going to work with KP. Let's let Luka play with these bigs and then we'll figure the defense out. And they did it. Can you get yourself to that point with Christian Wood? Can you get yourself to that point where, okay, we're going to score. We're going to put pressure on teams and we're going to give him this and we're going to roll with it. I don't know. And it's like, so much of the conversation becomes Christian Wood's bad on defense. I don't even know if it's Christian Wood's bad on defense. I just think he has a skill set and I don't know how much it impacts this overall team's defensive scheme. Because yeah, you put him at the five with Luka, it looks fantastic. But then if I'm a team, it's not just I'm going to put Christian Wood in action. It's I'm going to space Christian Wood and make him make a decision. And you know who else is going to be spaced? Luka. Both of them are now going to have to fly around and make rotations. I feel comfortable. Like, that's an aspect that I feel like gets lost. That's no shade or disrespect. This is a team that's based on rotations and scheme. So why wouldn't I put them in there?
Yeah.
You got Luka having to guard Jrue Holiday now, just because that's because Wood's at the five. It's like, huh? Wait. He's navigating screens now? That's what we're doing? I don't know. Where are you at with Dallas, man?
Dallas is weird to me. As you just laid out the laundry list of all of the question marks surrounding Dallas, and you did so well. I think for me, defensively, I think they're 12th in defensive rating right now, which is fine, but not the level that we were at last year. I think in a vacuum, if you told me, or heading into the offseason, like, okay, they have Christian Wood on the roster, they're going to play him 25 plus minutes a night, they're going to slide from 7th to 12th defensively. Oh, that's great. They only slid 5 spots. The offense is going to be tremendous. The move has worked if they've been able to find a balance that way. The fact that they're 12th on defense and offense is where I'm like, wait a minute. Because you can't, you know, to the Steelers, to the Christian Wood thing, how much does the offensive contribution matter if the defense is going to be a mess? And if the offense isn't being lifted to insane levels, then what are you doing when you have Jason Kidd as the head coach who very clearly wants the defense to be established? When he got hired, the first thing he talked about is like, hey, we got to guard. This wasn't a team that guarded. We got to get that right. And everything else will take care of itself. And so I do kind of wonder about that aspect. And like, I say that as a general note about the offensive defense. Like, I know with Luka and Christian Wood on the floor together, the offense has been really, really good. Like, that pairing in particular has worked. But like, zooming out, is that going to be enough to push everything forward? It's kind of the point that I'm trying to make there, just offer a little bit of clarification. But I do wonder if that's going to be enough. And smaller, like, is that going to be enough to sway Jason Kidd to your point, like, pick a poison? Like, will that offense or will that pairing be enough to where Jason Kidd has to be like, all right, I know what I want to do, but like, this is what's going to work. Because famously, in the other stops, like, Jason Kidd wants to do what he wants to do. And if it doesn't work, then it's just not going to work. And so I worry about that inflection point being reached at some point. They have to figure out something. And then with the offense, it's a whole lot of Luka, and we knew that. It was always going to be a whole lot of Luka. I think we kind of have to talk about the fact that, like, all of the connectors, like, it's easy to talk about Luka and then who else can create a shot. And that's where, as you mentioned earlier, Dinwiddie has done very well this season. But like, it's a problem that, but Spencer Dinwiddie's played well. Christian Wood has also provided good offense. It's a problem that all of the connectors have taken a step back. I love Dorian Finney-Smith. He is driving closeouts. I don't feel like he's driving closeouts as well as he did last year. And if he's making kicks on the move, like, it just hasn't hit the same. Maxi Kleber, like, you talked about it. I did the breakdown on the last possession where he kind of short circuits on a short roll. Like, he's a better short roll decision maker than Kristaps Porzingis was. That doesn't mean he's a great short roll decision maker. He's never been that. And if Maxi is having the short circuit sequences, that's a problem. And so you add, so if Dorian isn't connecting the same way, if Maxi isn't connecting the same way, and then you zoom out and Dorian isn't shooting as well from three as a play finisher, Maxi isn't hitting threes yet, Tim Hardaway Jr. hasn't shot well from three. Now it's, okay, the offense is Luka, Christian Wood, Spencer Dinwiddie do stuff or nothing else happens. Or, and even if they are able to create some advantages, they might, the shots might be missed anyway. And so now you're dealing with a flow issue and a lack of productivity. And now you get into these ruts where, okay, well, it was always going to be a lot of Luka. Now it's a lot of Luka in all caps, because now he's the only person you can really trust to get you something. And I wonder how much of the Dallas, like, malaise during this stretch, how much is solved if Maxi just makes quicker decisions if he's hitting a short roll. If Dorian Finney-Smith is a little snappier. If those two and Reggie Bullock, who has just not made a three in 4 months, it feels like. what happens if the shooting returns to normal? Are we here in a week and a half saying Dallas is a team that impressed because they have now won 6 of their last 8 and they're bombing away from 3? I just wonder, like, how much of it is that? Like, I don't even care to have like the Luka off ball discussion right now, because I feel like the bigger issue is, what are the others doing? Luka can create the advantages. If you, one, can't take advantage of them missing shots, that's a problem. Bigger picture, if you can't maintain the advantages, what are we doing? Like, you made the point, like, I think Dallas thought the defense was going to be banked in. For me, I'm like, I thought the offense was going to be banked in. And the offense has been worse than I thought. And you can't afford, like, you are baking in a defensive question mark, bringing Christian Wood into the fold. And so, like, I'm expecting, even if the move works, there's going to be at least a little bit of a hit. You just think the offense is going to be so good. Like, okay, if they're 12th in defense instead of 7th, but they're now 2nd in offense, I bet. If they're both on the same level, that's, you're not getting to where you want to go. And that's no disrespect to Luka, who has been insane. Spencer Dinwiddie has played well. It doesn't matter if you can't maintain and capitalize on the advantages created from those two. I think that's kind of, those are my overarching thoughts on Dallas.
No, I mean, it's a good point. I think the formula can work and look a lot better in the playoffs. But again, they only have so much margin for error. If they're not creating those looks or keeping defenses in rotation, it's going to be tough. And if the defense isn't there, it's going to be tough. They're not going to get easy ones. I wonder, because who out there do you trust to get to drive and kick?
It's Luka, Spencer. I want to say Josh Green. I don't want to put that on him yet. He's been good. But, like, he's the guy that's capitalizing on the tilted defense already, not necessarily the guy that's pump journey. So, like, it's those two. And, like, you mentioned the Christian Wood pops. Like, he will drive out of those. But even that feels a little bit more static. It's a catch, a pump, a hold a little bit, another pump, and then it's a drive. And he's good enough to finish those. But, you know, from a flow perspective, that's not the same thing. It's not the same instantaneous move that keeps the defense in rotation. It just feels so... I feel like there's no real middle ground with Dallas on offense. It's either I have created the look, we good, or there are 6 extra passes in this possession. It just doesn't feel like the buzzsaw. Like, even going back to the Toronto game, like, it felt like they created, like, Luka diced up 2 on the ball. But, like, those were automatic reads. Like, the new 2 on the ball was coming. They spaced it in a way to where they were able to manipulate that coverage. And it just devolved into, will the shots fall or will they not? And it just doesn't feel like there's much behind that right now. And that isn't how I felt about Dallas offensively last year. You can still have the big picture, will heliocentric offense win? You can have that debate still. But, like, even within that, we knew Dallas was a heliocentric offense last year. But again, if you trap Luka, you can trust, all right, Dorian's going to catch this on the short roll this time if he's screening for Luka. And now he's going to get downhill, or he's going to make the quick pass, swing, swing, shot. It's been a whole lot of catch, hold, survey, everyone's back, give that to Luka.
Yeah, that's the one thing. So when they have the advantage and they don't get anything out of it, now they have to get it back to him to recreate the advantage. It's like, Wait a minute. That's where it's like, can we have a base? Can we set a screen for someone else? What's that look like? Can we get some looks schemed up action-wise, empty corner, something to make those a threat? Some downhill action, some staggers, something off a screen to maybe get a roll that way so we can lean on that a little bit more. The play that stood out to me, because, you know, I've defended Dallas's offense when people have had questions, but there's a play in the Milwaukee game. I think Luka drove, fell down, was holding his leg. Milwaukee scores. Dallas brings it up. Luka just gets up, and they throw it to him for a post-up. And I'm like...
Y'all didn't just see...
This man was
just... I can't get a break.
This man was in pain 2 seconds ago. can we run something else? So, I mean, it'll be interesting. I mean, to your point, it's not like a big, huge tweak. If the defense gets better, they're going to look a lot better. if those guys start knocking down shots, they're going to look a lot better. But it's just interesting to watch this scenario and this team have the feel of like, we're close to what we can be, but we're not quite hitting it. So which part do we need to fix first?
Yeah.
Because that's the beauty of this league. We can talk about adjustments and the journey that teams go on. Sometimes teams are just really close to that level and they lose 7 out of 10 games and that's their season. And we never really think about it because we forget when they were 9 and 10 and trying to figure it out. We just remember, oh, y'all were bad. So I don't think it's dire for Dallas, but it is a crossroads. It is a space where they gotta either revamp, retool, figure out which side they want to lock in on and get better.
Yeah. I guess my question was going to be like, do you feel like this is, regardless of which side comes first, or, you know, ideally it's both sides of the ball getting better, but is it just, hey, these guys have to play better, or do you think they need to look elsewhere? And do they need like a part two of the trade they made last, not trading Christian Wood or even anyone specific, but just, okay, we need to shake something up in January to help balance what we want to do. We need to find a play connector, or we need to consolidate some of the bigs and find another wing or something to that nature. Do you think that it's just this roster can just play better and they'll be, again, small margin for error, but if they play better, they're fine? Or do you think they need something from the outside?
I mean, I'm sure they would take another wing or a shooter, but, I mean, who's available? Who are you going to get? If your guys aren't playing well, you're probably going to get the deal you want. So part of it is we just got to make sure we maximize these guys first.
Oh, boy. There's just so much going on. And then just following, like, the passive-aggressive things in the in the post-game is fun. Like, I'm glad you hit it on up top where Luka's like, man, we did. Got some fun stuff in that third quarter. And Jason Kidd's like, you know, we just couldn't get stops in that quarter. Like, we all know, like, what that is. And it's funny to be on the outside of that. I can't imagine what the decision makers there are like, oh, snap. Because I think this is something that you've asked, like, how, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier, like, how much did Jason Kidd want Christian Wood? Like, obviously wanted more reinforcements for Luka, but did he want Christian Wood?
Look, I don't think it's happening. I got no sources, but I could picture a coach's meeting divided by who do we play? Go with Christian Wood. No, let's go with Dwight. We got defense. Nah, JaVale's got size. Nah, but Maxi Kleber, you can do it all. What about Dorian? I could just see it in my head. That's no fun, which is ironic because the trade they made last year made it a lot easier to do this. Big wise. Nope,
this is the nine.
this is who we have. We got to figure it out. So, yeah, man. Yeah. I still like Dallas, though. So, I just figured I'd do some thinking.
No, this is a lot of fun to talk through because I've had similar thoughts with Dallas. Like, hey, what's happening here? They got out to the hot start and now they've lost 4 straight. It's like, wait, which side of the corner y'all going to land on? And if you're in the middle, while 12 different teams are competing right now in the West, like, what does the middle look like right now? Like, and just to bounce off your point from the end, like, it's fun to have, not fun, but like to have these conversations now with the 9 and 10, when we fast forward to March and it's Dallas needs to win 2 of the next 3 to avoid the play-in. And it's like, hey, how'd it get here? You zoom back to this start. And it's like, oh, this skid where we were talking about the offense being kind of weird and the defense needing a base with Christian Wood, and it all kind of adds up. But also, man, the shooters got to knock down shots, man. I don't know what's going on with Tim and Reggie. I don't know what's happening. It's not the quality of the look. They just have to make shots. It's weird when good shooters just have these stretches. There's nothing to really game plan there. It's like, hey, we hope you hold the ball the right way and then you find it for the boring stuff. Like, I don't know. Sometimes good shooters just miss.
They're shooting sub 30 though.
Yeah. Like it's bad. And so to the point I made earlier about them being 12th in offense, like they're 12th, they're a top half of the league offense with that shooting.
Yeah, we're going to get some pretty, it's very fixable. Like, if they make a lot more shots, it changes. You're not making shots. Now you're in transition. Transit defense is bad. Your half court defense isn't where it needs to be, and so on and so forth.
Oh yes, the dreaded snowball effect with basketball teams. You love to see it.
Ugh, 29.8% on catch and shoot threes.
You have now. You're in the weeds now with the with the shooting. Now,
all right.
Yeah. Like Dallas is interesting indeed. Let's pivot a little bit. Steve, who are the players that caught your eye over this recent stretch?
Nikias, since 1973-1974, there are three players who have put up 31 points, 29 rebounds, and three block shots in the game. Can you name them?
I love this stat already. One is Zubats.
That's correct.
Let's see who else we got here. Do we have Shaq on the list?
We do not.
Ooh, no Shaq on the list.
There's one that you should get. There's one that you will not get.
Shoot, man. If Shaq ain't on the list. And this is 73-74. This feels out of Wilt range.
Correct.
It is decidedly in Wilt range. All right. And then the third one, 31-29 and three blocks. Is Moses Malone on the list?
Oh, I meant correct. It's not Wilt. I meant correct. It's out of range.
Well, fair enough. Okay. Well, again, is Moses Malone on the list?
No.
Is David Robinson on the list?
No.
Wow. 31-29 and three, surely. What is Dwight's career high in rebounds? I don't think he got to that. I am tapping out. What we got?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Elvin Hayes.
Oh.
Some are going to say that's worse than when you forgot who Rasheed Wallace was, but it's fine.
I blanked on the quote, man. Give him some credit.
It's okay. Right. I forgave you. Zubac, 29 rebounds in the game, 14 and 17 from the field. That's insanity. I did want to give a shout out to DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah.
Five straight double doubles going into tonight. 20 points a game, 13 rebounds, three assists, a block, shooting 66.7% from the field over that five-game stretch. I have another nugget for you.
Go ahead.
Since 2014-2015, there are only three players to average 20, 13, three assists, a block, and 66% field goal shooting. Can you name those? I gave you one.
Well, one is DeAndre Ayton.
Correct.
Very cool. And since 14-15?
Yes.
Is Jokic one?
Jokic is on there, yes.
I don't know if the rebounds are high enough for Embiid, or are they? Joel Embiid?
No.
Ah.
Don't make it too hard on yourself.
Don't make it too...
Don't freak out.
I see. Giannis has to be. Oh, goodness.
Yes. And now the fun fact is the times they did that, those were in their MVP years. So there you go, Phoenix Suns fan. You can say DeAndre Ayton's playing at an MVP level.
Lovely. Also, that's Western Conference Player of the Week, DeAndre Ayton.
Oh, I'm sorry.
How about that?
The vibes. Giannis
on the same list. That's good stuff. That's good stuff.
There you go. I have another question for you, Nikias.
What's up?
Do you know who leads the NBA in field goals made from 5 to 9 feet?
Oh, God. Not the floater game question. I do not.
Jalen Brunson.
Huh.
I think he has 46 of them, 8 more than KD, who's in second place. 30 or more points in 3 straight games. Free throws are ticking up, 6.1 attempts in the month of November. So keep an eye on that. He is playing. Andrew Wiggins. Look, man, I'm not going to go full Steph Curry, but I don't know if you can have the same take if Andrew Wiggins is an all-star again this year. Hey, man, he got better. I was just digging around. He's made 3 or more threes in 6 straight games. He's done it 9 out of 12 times in November. For the month of November, he's shooting 48.2% from 3. According to NBA stats, in the month of November, he's shooting 54.9% from 3 on catch and shoot. Just on catch and shoots.
That's nice.
For this season, he's shooting 48.1% from 3 on catch and shoots on 5.6 attempts. It was 41% last year. He's gotten better.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I could do the shooting thing and rebound?
Hey, man, that's what he needed.
And those are players I have.
Okay. Well, I will start with Jaren Jackson Jr., who is back to knocking down threes and swatting literally everything. Much welcome boost to Memphis, who another team that just continues to chug along and win, regardless of who's in and out of the lineup. It's kind of similar to last year, so that's been fun to track. Jusuf Nurkić is on my list this week, as Steve has the confused face on. You love to see it. But I've been impressed with the passing. I've been impressed with the screening. I've been impressed with the rebounding. He is launching threes, or has done so over the last week or so. It knocked those down at a solid clip, like over 5 attempts, flirting with 40% from three. It's been a good stretch of games for him. Like, I can quibble about the defense in space and some of the finishing, but if he's able to impact games outside of that, or if he's able to just finish, I don't have much to say about him. He's been playing pretty well, so I want to give him some love. Jalen Green in Houston. First and foremost, he's just a lot of fun. The shot creation is still there. It seems to be making some better decisions as a playmaker. Important growth for him. Still not there yet. There are still some predetermined reads. Would like for him to eye the corner a little bit more. But seems to have a little bit more patience in pick and roll. He is starting to make better decisions. He is getting downhill with some real fervor. And it's just a lot of fun to watch him when the shot clock winds down. Like, his footwork for his age is insane. And he's able to get to virtually any shot that he wants to. There's a really solid 2-game stretch over the weekend. Houston with back-to-back wins on one of those over the Atlanta Hawks, which, you know, I guess we'll talk about Atlanta again at some point. We'll see. We'll throw in there. But shout out to Jalen Green in Houston. Last shout out I had was for Killian Hayes, who is still defending, still pushing in transition, getting downhill a little bit more. He has the pull-up jumper going. It's going to be so important for him to knock down that shot, right? It's behind the arc or even inside the arc if teams are content with dropping against him or ducking under screens against him. He has to take those shots in rhythm, has to take it with confidence. He is doing so over the last 2 weeks. You gave a quick shout to Detroit earlier. He's played well. We won't get the apology yet, but Killian's been doing the thing. There is still hope. Still have a guy on the island here. I've enjoyed the Killian Hayes experience as of late. And those are the players that I wanted to shout out. Do you have free throws, good sir?
I did want to point out a quick big agenda.
This should be good.
Kendrick Perkins, November 22nd. The 76ers look a totally different squad when they play team and all caps basketball. The offense was more fluid with all that individual basketball. So you guys were on the same page there.
It's been a minute since we've had a big agenda.
I gotta wait. It's like a play. If I run it too much, now you're just ready for it. And now any question I ask you is, yeah, I don't want to answer that.
Fair enough. I appreciate you sneaking that in there, I suppose.
What player in the NBA right now is the true definition of a point guard to you?
Oh, Lord. True definition of a point guard. TJ McConnell. I have no further questions.
Oh, do you have free throws? That is ridiculous.
I have a handful for you. Which return do we get first? Robert Williams III or Draymond's podcast?
Wow.
I'm just asking questions.
We'll go Draymond's podcast.
Okie dokie. OG Anunoby or Andrew Wiggins? We're running it back.
Andrew Wiggins.
Okay. Jeremy Grant or Brandon Ingram?
Brandon Ingram.
All righty. Which 10-10 team do you currently believe in the most? The Wolves or the Wizards?
Oh. Oh, buddy. Believe in for what?
Yes.
Ooh. Nasty work.
Hey, man.
The Wolves are coming off a game. They said if he catches the ball, it's... Wolves. I don't feel great about it, though.
Wow. How many more Karl Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert pick and rolls do you think we see this year?
25.
How many of those 25 will you laugh at?
17.
Oh. Was that a smooth 68%? Oh, goodness. More faith right now. The Knicks or the Bulls?
I have to go. Oh, no. No.
Go ahead.
Ah, Lord. Bulls, they got DeMar.
The Jalen Brunson push wasn't doing it for you, huh?
Nah, I mean, he going to win them at least 4 or 5 games out the mud.
All right. Who snaps the losing streak first, Utah or Dallas?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm going to be responsible with my platform and actually look and see who these teams play before I just say some nonsense.
Oh, well,
depends on when Mike Conley comes back. Oh, Utah's got a 6-game homestand. Oh, they're going to win one of those. Dallas plays Detroit on Thursday. Ooh, Utah.
Ah, okay. Oh. Have you mourned? Are you over the Oregon?
No, I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
There's no reason. Oregon State did not have to do that at all. They did not have to do that. They had a good little season. Now you want to just have a memorable moment.
Ah, I see.
No, I want to talk about it, man.
Okay. Well, that concludes my free throws. Good, sir.
Nasty work by you.
I just had some questions on the list. That's all.
Is it funny that Gary Trent Jr. has 7 steals in 2 games since coming back?
Hashtag Nick Nurse was right.
That man said bet. Now where are my shots at?
Now that's so funny. Like, for your coach to be like, I don't want to say he was a liability, but yeah, he got a liability right now. We thought he's going to be better than this. I was like, yo. Oh, okay. Continue.
Funnier Bruce Brown quote, that he's happy because he's doing things people said that he couldn't do, or that the people ended up being a lot of the GMs in the NBA.
Yes. Also the latter.
What do you think Zubac is more mad about? The Zubac be like video or falling 1 rebound short of a 30-30 game?
How many jerseys does that man have?
Hey man, could have.
No freaking way. There's commitment to the bit, and then there's whatever that is.
Have you seen it?
No.
I forgot to
change that. I saw the caption. I was like, absolutely not.
We're gonna change that today, buddy. Don't you worry about it. Hey man, once you're in, you're in. Gotta admire the commitment, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, speaking of Minnesota, they are down 9-2 to the Wizards. So I'm gonna go ahead and just change that up. Right away. Apologize to Porzingis, Beal, Kyle Kuzma, Wes Unseld, the entire district.
Hey man, it's a second night of a back-to-back for the Wolves.
Put my left hand up for the rest of the pod.
Okay.
Who are we?
Get out of here, man.
You're not going to finish the line?
Okay. Absolutely not.
That's fine. Luka called Giannis the best player in the NBA. Do you believe him?
This feels like a big trap. I will say yes. I don't feel great about it. I feel great about the answer. I don't feel great about what the answer is going to spark.
No, there's nothing there.
Oh, okay.
Is Jason Tatum a top 5 player in the league?
This is absolutely a trap. He's certainly having a top 5 season.
Okay. Yusuf Nurkic or Mason Plumlee?
Yusuf Nurkic.
Is Kemba Walker a pure hooper or nah?
Oh, God. No. Kemba's very good at basketball.
What do you prefer, a pure hooper or a bucket getter?
What does that even mean?
What's your preference?
I feel like the answer is just yes. Like the Pierre Hooper is the bucket getter most of the time.
Who wins a 7-game series? A team of Michael Redd, James Harden, Chris Mullin, Chris Bosh, Bill Russell, or Isaiah Thomas, Manu Ginobili, Michael Redd, Zach Randolph, David Robinson.
There are two Michael Redds?
I might have bottled it. It's fine.
I was say, what in the left is this?
Yeah, I'm bad at reading. Don't worry about it. Power rank these three people who don't want to play overseas with Dwight Howard: Carmelo Anthony, DeMarcus Cousins, and Isaiah Thomas.
Oh, God. I thought you were going to throw Shaq in there at some point. I was like, well, we know what number one was. Isaiah Thomas, Melo, and who's the third? DeMarcus Cousins? Probably Cousins, Melo, Thomas.
Okay. Do you think Team USA has a chance to win this game tomorrow?
I'm going to keep it real with you, Chief.
It's hey, personal.
Oh, man. Best of luck. That's all I got. Oh, geez. That just broke you. That's amazing.
Yeah, man. Take us home. Oh.
Take us home. I just did. Oh boy, that could have been bad. Thank you for listening. Yeah. To the Dunker's Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join us in the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. Having a lot of fun in there, some fun discussions, a lot of banter. Join us for the Dunker Spot watch parties if you have not already. We are having a lot of fun in there watching games. We're about to turn on one now as we record late on a Monday afternoon. About to check out the Monday slate of games. But with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
They told Faku he gotta go.